Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and today we'll be sharing a story about a man who put premature babies on display at sideshows in the early 20th century. But don't judge him for that, because he was not exploiting them. Instead, he was saving their lives at a time when eugenics was promoting the idea that premature babies or weak babies or disabled babies should just be left to die. I'm going to be talking with author Dawn Raffel about her book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney: How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and today we're going to be sharing the story of a man that most of you have never heard of, but whose work might have affected you or your children or your grandchildren. The man in question is Dr. Martin Cooney, who popularized the use of incubators to save premature babies at a time when the medical establishment often just let these children die, and when some doctors promoting eugenics actually believed these babies should die because they were weak and would drag down society. What makes Cooney's work even more interesting is that he didn't do it at a hospital or in a doctor's office. He did it at world's fairs and sideshows. And there's even another odd layer to his story. There are questions as to whether he was actually a doctor and if Cooney was really his name. Journalist and author Dawn Raffel investigated his life and has put her discoveries in a book called The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney: How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. To tell us more, I am pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Dawn Raffel. Dawn, it's so great to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Now, this is a fascinating story, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, but it's also, as the title indicates, it's an odd story. So start off by setting the scene of one of these sideshows that Martin Cooney worked in the early 1900s, like maybe at Coney Island or Atlantic City. What kinds of attractions did people see there, and how did Cooney's exhibits fit into it?
Okay, so yeah, if you were to go to Coney Island or Atlantic City or the midway of a World's Fair in the early 20th century, you would see all kinds of sideshows. And among the sword swallowers and the midgets, as they were called then, and the shooting galleries and the freak shows, somehow in all this was an exhibition of live premature infants in incubators. So it was almost like a mini hospital. Right out on the midway, you could pay a quarter and you could go look at the premature babies in incubators.
Wow. And what did the, I mean, when people walked into the exhibit, what exactly did they see? I mean, were there nurses talking about the children or doing stuff to them?
There usually was somebody who was like a program guide explaining what was going on with the care of these babies. And you'd see little tiny babies in incubators, and people hadn't really seen preemies that small. They had trouble believing that these children were real.
Wow, wow. And well, what was the weight range of these premature babies?
They were usually 2 and 3 pounds.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. And what role did Cooney play as all this was going on?
Well, Dr. Cooney presented himself as a doctor who had medical degrees in Europe and had been the intern to a great French doctor. Honestly, it really wasn't true. He was a showman, and he was kind of the front person for this exhibition. But there were doctors who were working there, and as important, there were highly skilled nurses who really knew how to take care of these babies. So the trick was that you had the machines which kept the babies warm, and you also had nurses who understood how to feed babies that small and how to take care of them.
Yeah, because you write about in the book about feeding babies with a spoon to the nose. I mean, was this book a bit of a medical education for you, too, as you were researching it?
Oh, it absolutely was. I had to spend a lot of time diving through not only the cultural history of the boardwalk, but also the medical history of the care of premature children.
Sure. I'm talking to Dawn Raffel about her book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney: How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. At the time Dr. Cooney came on the scene, what was the medical establishment's attitude toward premature babies? Were they just kind of basically resigned to letting them die?
They didn't, as a whole, they didn't do much to help premature babies. Now, there certainly were individuals who were trying and doing their best, but the hospitals didn't have a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, they tried using incubators. A machine is only as good as the people using it. So if you don't have enough skilled nurses and if you don't have a clean facility, which in those days, sometimes hospitals were actually not all that clean.
Okay.
And you don't know how to feed preemies, you won't get a good result.
Yeah.
So for the most part, they kind of gave up, mm-hmm. most of them.
Okay. Well, as you write in the book, the choice in many cases was between a sideshow and letting the children die. So, I mean, did a lot of people see the sideshow part, especially in the medical establishment, did they see it as degrading or exploitative?
Well, they did. And I would say they had really mixed feelings. There were people who just felt it was degrading and exploitive and wanted to shut him down. But there were also many doctors, especially throughout New York City, who were sending their premature patients to him because although they felt uneasy with the spectacle, they also understood that this was the best and sometimes the only chance for these children.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you begin the book with a story about someone giving birth to twins. One of the twins dies, and then the father brings the other premature baby to Dr. Cooney in a shoebox. So I'm curious, I mean, is that something that happened often, that kind of thing? Just people rushing their premature babies from birth right to his incubators?
Yes, it did. People knew about the sideshow, and I feel like if you can imagine the terror of giving birth to this 2-pound child in the early 20th century and then realizing your only hope for this child was to take it to a sideshow on Coney Island,
mm-hmm.
where people would pay admission to look at your child. This was going on. The parents were bringing their children, and again, as time went on, the hospitals were sending their patients to the sideshow.
Wow. So would you say Dr. Cooney's sideshow, did that help move hospitals along in adapting, in bringing in more incubators and having them, you know, handled correctly? Like you said, if you don't have the people who know how to run them, they're not going to work right.
Well, I think he eventually had a very strong influence on neonatology. One thing is he kept claiming that his goal was to make propaganda for preemies.
Mm-hmm.
So he was constantly trying to convince both the public and the medical establishment. He would even hold reunions of his graduates so people could see these children thriving.
Yeah.
He had a great, great friend in Chicago, Dr. Julius Hess, who was a much more traditional physician, who was able to take Dr. Cooney's teachings into a more clinical setting and produce clinical results, publish articles. The friendship between these two men really had a very strong influence on the beginnings of neonatology in this country.
Okay. Now, did Dr. Cooney ever assert that he was the inventor of it, or he was just promoting what the incubators were doing?
Well, sometimes he did say that he was the inventor of it. What I find fascinating about him is I found him absolutely heroic, but he was imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
He fabricated his credentials. His fabrications became bolder as time went on, and there was really nobody to fact check. But if you put that on one side of the scale against saving all those lives on the other side of the scale, you know, he was heroic.
Yeah, heroic. He was a colorful hero. I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to author Dawn Raffel about her fascinating book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. We're talking about how Dr. Cooney's incubator show, sideshow in sideshows of the early 1900s, how they saved thousands of premature babies who were just between 2 and 3 pounds and who otherwise likely would have died. And you mentioned before that he was interested in creating propaganda for preemies, but you also write in the book about eugenics expositions, which were propaganda of another kind, and it's not a word we hear a lot nowadays. So talk a little bit about the idea behind eugenics at that time.
You know, eugenics was the very unfortunate outgrowth of the new science of genetics. So people started thinking, well, maybe we can breed better humans, sort of the way a stock breeder would.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much about survival of the fittest and deciding which people should marry and who should be able to have children. And it became increasingly horrifying where, you know, you had the involuntary sterilization of certain groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you also had doctors literally advocating to allow children born with severe disabilities to simply die.
Yeah.
And while eugenics did not directly target preemies, in the medical literature, they were called weaklings.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an attitude of, you know, well, why are we spending resources to save these weaklings? Maybe they will never be productive citizens.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just nature's way to let them go. So they didn't really have a lot of support.
Well, at one point in the book, you write about this, a movie that was used as eugenics propaganda. It was called The Black Stork. And as I'm reading your description of it, I'm thinking, I don't think I've ever heard of a more polar opposite movie to like Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life than The Black Stork. I mean, it's really creating almost the opposite message. Tell our listeners a little bit about what The Black Stork was about and how it affected people who saw it.
Oh, The Black Stork was a horrifying movie created by Dr. Harry Hazelton, who
mm-hmm.
was a real physician in Chicago. And he famously advocated to let severely disabled children die. He would invite the press to watch them die. And he created a movie where, you know, it was sort of showed the process of, you know, better to let this child die because he'll end up having a horrible life of, you know, crime and not be a useful person at
mm-hmm.
all. And,
yeah.
you know, let him go. And this was sort of the idea of poisoning people's minds against helping people who needed some extra help.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, the eugenicists inspired the Nazis in many ways.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I know you suggest in the book that there was an element of eugenics that infested the American view of not letting Jewish people into the U.S. as Hitler was rising to power. Talk about what you discovered there and what the mindset was going into it.
Well, many people in the eugenics department was well-funded.
Mm-hmm.
And they were persuasive with the State Department in not wanting to have a flood of Jews come into this country because they were fleeing Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Cooney himself was also involved in trying to get people out of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So he succeeded in about 15 cases. It was very hard.
Yeah.
And he managed to do that.
Yeah. And so he was being a hero in that other respect, too.
Well, you know, and I realized that he was just somebody who loved life. And he... You know, he wanted to save these children. He was trying to get people out of Europe. And I think he sort of felt like whatever he had to say in order to accomplish that,
mm-hmm.
he ended up saying. So if he had to say he was a medical doctor, well, that's what he went ahead and did.
I'm Tony Rossi, and you're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'll be back in a minute with more of my conversation with Dawn Raffel. But first, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
The most difficult trials in life demand that we dig deep within ourselves to find the capacity for courage that God has bestowed upon the human soul. But courage begins with an act of the will to persevere through pain, suffering, and even failure. To help you along that path, the Christophers have prepared a news note called Finding the Courage Within. It offers insights on building character, cultivating the ability to act courageously, and making sacrifices for the greater good. To request your free copy of Finding the Courage Within, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and I'm talking today with author Dawn Raffel about her book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. So far today, we've been talking about the fact that it was in the early 1900s that Dr. Cooney had these sideshows at World's Fairs in Coney Island in Atlantic City that showed incubators with premature babies that weighed between 2 and 3 pounds, babies who would have died if they hadn't been brought to him. And his incubators saved those babies, not at a doctor's office or a hospital, but at these sideshows, which is an incredible story. And it was also done at a time where eugenics was popular, the idea that the weak members of society could drag society down. And some people thought that because these premature babies were called weaklings, that they should be left to die. And there was even propaganda promoting that idea. And really what Dr. Cooney was doing was saving these babies despite all these efforts to promote the opposite idea. Let me just read, before I get back to my interview with Dawn, a blurb on the back of her book by author Melissa Faye Green. It's really about praise for the book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney. Green said, "Though Dr. Cooney was more showman than doctor, he saved babies' lives by the thousands and pioneered American neonatology. His story is richly told in a book that savors every honk of John Philip Sousa from a marching band, every salty crunch of carnival popcorn, every sparkle of a Ferris wheel turning in a night sky, and the desperate hopes of parents traveling by bus or subway to the carnivals, carrying their premature newborns in shoeboxes." This really is a fascinating story. So here now is the rest of my interview with the author of The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, Dawn Raffel. One of the other things that struck me talking about Dr. Cooney's love of people is that his incubators were you know, equal access to people of all religions, of all colors and everything. He helped poor people. What did you learn that it meant to them to have his help, people who otherwise wouldn't have had it?
Oh, it was tremendously important to them because, you know, during part of the time that he had these sideshows, it was the Depression. People were out of work.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have health insurance. So even in the few situations where later in the 20th century there was some available health care in hospitals, people couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Cooney was, well, because people were paying admission to the sideshow, he provided the treatment free of charge.
Okay.
And, you know, often people would try to donate something. If you had something, you would try to help them out a little bit with the expense.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the parents were very wealthy, and they would generously donate to him, but he never sent anybody a bill.
Okay. So he was serving the poor and the rich. He really just came down to it. He wanted to save babies.
Well, he did. And, you know, for me, when I first saw the picture of this incubator sideshow on the Midway, my first reaction was, that is exploitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a different view when you look at it more deeply and you realize, well, no, it's very odd,
mm-hmm.
but this person is saving lives.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's such a difference because like you were just saying, I mean, when we get a three-dimensional view of people instead of a one-dimensional view of labeling them like we often do in society, you just get a whole other picture. And, you know, the other sides of his work were really just amazing. And, I mean, you just referenced the fact that, you know, when you first saw the picture. So, I mean, before this book, you were primarily known as a fiction writer. So talk about how Dr. Cooney's story first crossed your path.
I first saw my father left some papers after he died that I was going through that just, he described going to a World's Fair in Chicago during mm-hmm. the Depression. I just thought that was interesting. I started looking into it and I looked at some pictures. That's when I saw the incubator, which I thought was strange. I live in New York and I went with a friend to the Coney Island Museum, and that's when I saw, this same guy was at Coney Island for 40 years. That's really strange. There's a story behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this story had to be told as nonfiction because the most astonishing thing about it is that it's true.
Yeah. It is stranger than fiction. That is very true. I'm talking to Dawn Raffel about the book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney. Now, as a fiction writer, I'm sure you have to do your share of research, but I've got to imagine it pales in comparison to the investigations you had to go through for this book. What was it like researching all this information, which was, as you know, detail in the book, was pretty tough to come by sometimes?
Yeah, it was really a 4-year rabbit hole of research that
wow.
I went down, and partly because Dr. Cooney did fabricate his identity, it took me a lot of just even going through immigration, naturalization, census records, people's wills, just to try to piece together who he really was and where he came from,
mm-hmm.
As in addition to the medical research and the historical research of the Midways.
Even though he had such an impact on the use of incubators, why do you think his story disappeared for so long?
I think medical history tends to be written from inside the academy.
Okay.
And it would be kind of strange to think that your profession got a big boost in the beginning from a showman.
Yeah, I guess they wouldn't take kindly to being shown up by a showman in that sense. So that was very interesting. But I mean, you mentioned before about you know, sometimes premature babies would die without Dr. Cooney's intercession. What were some of the long-term health results of the babies that he took care of?
You know, unfortunately, he didn't really keep records that we can access.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he did have a book of records during his lifetime. I have no idea where it went.
Mm-hmm.
I've met several of the babies who were in those incubators who are absolutely fine today.
Okay.
But I'm sure some of them may have had disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all those thousands of children. But many of them, you know, had no disabilities at all.
Sure. Well, what was it like for you meeting some of those survivors, some of those of Dr. Cooney's babies? I mean, had they been interested in what was going on, or was talking to you the first they had ever heard of the way they were born and taken care of at that early age?
Oh, it was so interesting meeting Dr. Cooney's patients. They had all wondered about him their whole lives because he was mysterious and they didn't really know. Nobody knew that he wasn't a real doctor. That
mm-hmm.
took me by surprise too when I got to the bottom of that. And they all asked me, have you met anyone else? So at one point I was able to bring some of them together for a reunion, which
mm-hmm.
was really fun.
Yeah.
And since the book has come out, I've heard from more.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the book is getting the word out there and more people are coming, and so Dr. Cooney's profile will probably be raised by this book, and maybe he'll get some of the credit that he deserves after all these years.
Well, I hope so. I really, you know, would like him to get the credit that he deserves. And,
yeah.
you know, in the beginning of the book, there's an anecdote about a 2-pound baby where the obstetrician just says, there's absolutely no hope. This child cannot live a day. I met her when she was 95 years old.
Oh, boy, that's certainly proving the doctors wrong. And she was still probably in you know, semi-decent health even at that age.
Yeah, she passed away when she was 96.
Okay.
But there is someone alive who's 98.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So it's wonderful that they got to experience the fact of you writing the book and getting to know all the characters in the book. I mean, did you get to know much about the people who helped him too, his wife, his nurse, his daughter?
As much as I could. You know, they kept a low profile and they kind of kept to themselves.
Okay.
But a picture of them is beginning to emerge. They were all really very dedicated
mm-hmm.
and they devoted their lives to this.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking to author Dawn Raffle about her book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. Let me just touch on your own background. As a writer, it's not always a secure career when you're going into it. So I'm curious, what made you decide to pursue a career in writing? Because you have, I mean, a wonderful background. You're one of the helped launch the Oprah magazine. You've taught creative writing. You're a longtime magazine editor. How did you get into just the business of writing and storytelling?
I have always wanted to be a writer. My mother used to say that I would go to sleep with a book instead of a stuffed animal. You know, I've always loved books and I've always loved writing. So I was always doing it on the side.
Mm-hmm.
The balance has just shifted with my doing more writing now.
Okay. Well, was there a particular type of writing that you felt drawn to in the beginning, or did it just kind of, you just kind of come along, whatever comes along, you kind of go with the flow?
I started as a fiction writer, but again, you know, in this case, it was a story that just found me, and I felt like I had to tell it, and
yeah.
I had to tell it as the truth.
Sure. I mean, as I was reading the book, I was reminded of the Jewish maxim, whoever saves one life saves the world. Do you think that really applies to what Dr. Cooney was doing?
I do. I saw him as sort of a cockeyed embodiment of that statement.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, the little town that he was born in, Croatian, was known as being a publisher of the Jerusalem Talmud, which is where that quote came from.
Okay. So I mean, again, I'm reluctant to give too much away, but of the book. But I mean, he did come from a Jewish background, even though the name Cooney doesn't suggest that. Do you think his being raised in the conditions that he was, maybe his own spirituality, helped inform the fact that he did this work that really got him in touch with the better angels of his nature.
I think that did. And also there were doctors in his family. There were quite a few doctors in his family. And mm-hmm. so I think that need to help people may have been part of his mindset too.
Sure, sure. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to author Dawn Raffel about her book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. I really encourage you to read this book because this is a story that none of us have ever heard before. It's getting wonderful press and reviews. And Dawn, just, as we close, tell me a couple more things. First, what do you hope when people get from reading this book? What do you hope when they close it? What are they left with, the message?
Heroes don't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. You know, I think sometimes we just find ourselves in a situation where we have the possibility of making a real change for other people, and we can go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
I would like to certainly see Dr. Cooney get his due.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just interesting to look at, you know, who is heroic? And the fact that somebody could do this. You couldn't do exactly what he did now. You certainly couldn't fabricate your credentials and have a sideshow. But one person can make a real difference.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it kind of, all the work that Christopher's do, who are the sponsors of the show, revolves around this idea that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. And Dr. Cooney really did that through all his work and his whole life and career. And this book really points that out. So I congratulate you on writing an incredibly and fascinating story. And I have to just add also that whoever did the cover art is, I also want to give credit to, because the book first came to my attention when I was wandering through Barnes & Noble, and there was just something about the cover that struck me and made me want to pick it up. And that's what got to me reading it, and that's what got us talking today. So I'm so glad that, you know, you did all that hard-working research and got in touch with this great story of a man who we never heard of, but who we really should know more about because he did save thousands of babies' lives. So, Dawn, thanks so much for being on the show today, and thank you for writing this book and sharing Dr. Cooney's story with all of us.
Oh, thank you so much.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.